Welcome to the Speak Like a Leader podcast with John Bates.
All right, welcome to the show. Today, joining me, I have Amari, who's someone that I met in Los Angeles. And he lives in Los Angeles. He's an international speaker and a life coach. And I love this. Amari specializes in assisting people live lives of fulfillment, fundamentally. And, you know, he works a lot with creatives. There are a lot of creatives, obviously, in Los Angeles, and he also works with leaders. You can find him on the web at howtohuman.io. And his Instagram account, that's the place to go, is at king.imari, but it's KYNG.IMARI. So, yep. Amari, thanks for joining us. Did I get that all okay?
You got it perfectly, man. You got it excellent. That was pretty well done. Yeah. It's almost like we rehearsed that.
All right. Well, so you know, thanks for joining me. We have had the chance to hang out some, and we've actually done some things together, and I've seen you at work and you've seen me at work. And I think that I really love a life of fulfillment, because one of the things that I realized a while ago, which seems, I guess, obvious in hindsight, but I just don't know why people, including me, don't think about it enough in the moment, is that I just don't think success is success if it's not fulfilling. You know,
exactly. I've met so many quote unquote
successful people who are unfulfilled. So what do you see? You know, what's one of those things? What comes to mind? What stands out for you when you think of the juxtaposition between success and fulfillment, and you know, how they really should be together, but they're not always together?
Man, you start with a big question. You just gonna open up a can of worms to get us started. I love it.
Well, let's do it. I mean, this is what you do, right?
I'm just gonna jump right in, and we're gonna go off in different tangents of this conversation. Let me know when you want me to rein it in. But as you know, I was a filmmaker for a while, right? And when I was a filmmaker, I had a lot of quote unquote, I use those quotes intentionally, but I had a lot of success, right?
Yeah.
Like I was 20 something years old and I had reached hundreds of millions of people, and I felt an integrity with the work that I was making. I didn't feel like I was making, you know, like Lubriderm commercials or shit that just had no substance. I was making stuff that I felt like made a difference, right?
Yeah. Yep.
So on the outside, I had a lot of success.
Yeah.
Right? Internally, I felt terrible. Internally, right. I didn't have any fulfillment, right? And, you know, now that, you know, hindsight is 2020 and I'm able to look back years down the road, I can see that the success I had was a performance. The success that I had was a role of a filmmaker, a role of a director that I was playing. So I was always putting on the hat in order to be successful, right? Mm-hmm. Rather than right now, what me and you do what we do because we truly just love it. When we're like sitting down in front of somebody, whether it's a crowd of hundreds of thousands of people or we're sitting in front of one person, me and you are in the pocket. We're in the bag. Like we are simply just being quote unquote successful by being ourselves, right? Mm-hmm. Like my natural makeup of me as Amari, like the charisma, the humor, the passion for the way the mind works, that's just natural to me. Rather than when I was a director, I was like, how do I have to be as a director? What do I have to do as a director?
Yeah. Right? What should I be? How should
exactly. I be? Yeah. So like, that's why I say it was like a character. It was like a role that I was playing. Yeah. It was a layer on top of myself that was just not necessary. You know?
I mean, it sounds like there was some element of inauthenticity, like there was some element of that wasn't really you.
Yeah. And it's so interesting that, and it's funny, I've never thought about this before, but there's also an element of like trust in it, like self-trust.
Yeah.
When I was a filmmaker, I always knew I wanted to impact the way that people think. And mm-hmm. I thought the best way to do that was through film, because I was like, here's something that, you know, millions of people watch, people invest like their identities in the messages that they receive from film. And I was like, oh, cool, I can do this. Yeah. Rather than just trusting myself, like, I don't even need a camera. I don't need all these lights. I don't need all these fancy dialogues and scripts. I just need the passion that I feel for changing people's lives. And that in itself is enough for me to change somebody's life.
Yeah. Yeah. Interesting. Yeah. Interesting. That whole, you know, what I have, who I am is not quite enough thing gets in the way a lot.
Yeah.
Right.
When all you ever needed was yourself. And it sounds so corny, but it's, you know, I'm living proof, man.
Well, you know, one of the things, Damari, that I find myself sharing with people on a regular basis, and I'd love your take on this, is that thing that everybody's got a thing that's good that people compliment them on, or that obviously produces results. And yet I think a lot of times people, including myself, I did this for a long time, didn't get I had it. I didn't trust that I had it. So instead of doing what I would have done if I knew I had it, I was always out trying to prove I had it and feeling that I didn't. And that led to some really nonsensical, hurtful behavior. And then one day it finally dawned on me, oh my gosh, this thing that I have been insecure about whether I have it at all, I have it. And the minute it really hit me that I had it, I needed to step into taking responsibility for it. Whereas before, I was completely not responsible for it because I wasn't even sure I had it.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah. It's a fun paradox, isn't it? It's like when you say that, it just a really cool thought landed in my mind is that like the harder you try to prove who you are, the less access you have to who you are.
Yeah, perfect. Exactly. It's why trying too hard is such a problem, right?
Right. Yeah. It's like, dude, the people who are like Serena Williams doesn't get onto the tennis court and she's like, man, I really hope people see how good I am today. She's just like, I'm focused on the ball and I'm just going to be myself.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah.
Well, so how do taking all that and the fulfillment angle and all of this and looping it around to what my center point is in these conversations, communication and leadership. Mm-hmm. How do you think, what do you see happening with the leaders that you work with as you bring them to themselves and bring them to focus on more fulfillment? And, you know, what do you see around that whole world of leadership and communication and as it dials into fulfillment?
Now this is an interesting conversation. Yeah. It makes me even think about my own role as a leader. Like when I was directing, again, it gets back to this concept of, I felt like, oh, I have the label of director. I'm in charge of the success of this program. So I need to then do something a certain way. I have to act in a certain way, right? Mm-hmm. Rather than trusting in my innate self, right? That however I show up on set is going to be exactly what my crew and the show and the content and the actors need.
Yeah.
You know? I appreciate you bringing me on this, man, because one of my like deepest passions and one of the main reasons I love coaching is because I love supporting people in leadership roles. Because a lot of times people in leadership roles, by the inherent nature of leadership, these are the people who are alone. Yeah. These are the people who are holding the most weight on their shoulders. Yeah. These are the people that most people look at when shit is going south and they blame, right? And a lot of times when those people in those roles don't have the emotional support or like the reflections that they need in order to be their best selves, not only do they suffer, but everything that they're in control of, everything that they're leading suffers.
Absolutely.
You know, leaders are some of our most valuable resources on this planet because of all the things that they touch and all the things that they do, you know? Yeah. And I love what you do, especially because we've talked about this, but the better we take care of leaders is the better everything turns out, really.
Yeah, for sure. Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, I love making a difference for those who make a difference.
Yeah.
And that whole thing of, you know, there is a loneliness factor to leadership, you know?
Yeah.
And I think we get a lot of myths conflated when it comes to leadership around that, because, you know, a leader should be strong and a leader shouldn't need anything. Right.
Yeah.
Talk to anybody. All right. It's like, okay, that's freaking totally hogwash, you know?
Yeah.
A leader does need to be strong, but a leader, you know, the best leaders, I believe, you might like this. I've been coining a term, Amari. I call it insightful vulnerability.
Insightful vulnerability. Talk about that. I like
vulnerable. That's great. Be vulnerable as a leader. It's very powerful and it's very courageous. It's not, you know, there's nothing sissy about it. It's very courageous to be vulnerable. And when you couple the insight to the vulnerability, what did this teach? You? What are you doing different? What did you learn from this?
Mm-hmm.
Now it's insightful vulnerability, and there's just nothing more powerful in my book. And yet,
right. That's
very scary, because being vulnerable makes people feel like they're going to look weak and they don't feel like they should need to talk to anybody and they're so emotional. It's like, come on. Like, that's the exact opposite of what actually works. It's just what everybody sees in movies and thinks they need to do or something.
Right. Like, you got to be cold and rigid and emotionless. But it's, dude, I mean, like, I can objectively say, I mean, I know I probably have a biased opinion, but I would say I'm a good coach. And thanks, man. And I'm aware that a lot of what makes me really effective when I'm sitting across from somebody is that I share my story, my overcoming of like suicidal thoughts and my depression and my childhood and my traumatic upbringing. Like, I share that so openly because I'm aware of how effective that is in one, getting people to feel connected to me, so they're willing to open up, right?
Yeah.
And two, so that they don't feel like they're so alone in what they're dealing with.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. Like, how can I, as a coach, effectively coach a leader if I'm not willing to demonstrate the powerful underrated qualities of leadership, which is being transparent, which is being vulnerable? And the only way I got to that point is releasing the shame and the associations that I had with those things, right? If I had associations of, oh, I'm not supposed to be vulnerable, or I'm not supposed to admit to the tough, difficult things I've been through, then I wouldn't be a coach.
Yeah,
I wouldn't be doing what I'm doing right now.
No, I'm right there with you. You know, all that time I spent in the wilderness feeling like a total, complete loser, wondering if I was ever going to turn out okay. All those times, you know, those nights that I spent just agonizing over losing $80+ million of investment in my company and, you know, all that stuff. If I tried to shove that down, it would kill me. And if I didn't share it and I didn't work my way into being willing to share that, I would never be able to be as effective as I am. I could never do what I do. I could never have the compassion I have if I hadn't just been freaking knocked around myself, you know?
Right. And who wants to see somebody stand on top of a TED Talk stage and like just talk about how amazing their life is and how they've never had any struggles and they're just the strongest person ever? It's like, okay, cool. That might sound like a nice fairy tale, but I cannot relate to you at all. So you're not going to change anybody's life in the audience.
Never. And you know, Amari, it's one of the TED commandments is thou shalt be vulnerable. You know, don't just tell us the whole story. And that is one of the absolute keys to why people love TED Talk so much. It's also, I mean, I see so much overlap between a really great, really well done TED Talk and leadership in general. And one of the key things. If you can be vulnerable and share with us the hard things, you know, Les Brown says, people don't connect with your successes. They connect with your messes. Your message is in your mess. So if you can share that mess and what you learned out of it, boy, that's valuable. And people respect that. And I think everybody feels, including me, like at first I felt like if I tell people this, they're going to think I'm a total idiot loser. over $80 million. What's wrong with him? You know, right. That's what I thought. Well, right. Okay, I did do that. So it would be sort of silly for me to try to hide it. Mm-hmm. And what I realized after I really forced myself to start sharing that is the difference it makes. The lessons I learned out of that were real hard lessons, and I can shortcut that for people, you know, and they like that.
And a really interesting paradox is landing in my mind right now, but it's coming to me. I'm going to real time relay it to you. So this idea of people want to be strong so that they can't be hurt, right? They want to come across as like, they can't be hurt and they're impenetrable, right? What's interesting is like when I share the totality of my story, the totality of my emotions and the terrible things that I've been through and whatever, that makes me feel so untouchable. You know, it's like,
yeah. You made it through all that.
Right. And it makes me feel like now what can you use? Like nothing can hurt me because I've already shown you all my chips. You know what I mean? It's like, and I own it, right? Like I own yes, that was me. It's like what you just said. You're like, hey, I can come forward and tell you that I've lost $80 million, whatever. So then later on, you can't come back and be like, oh yeah, that guy was really successful, but he didn't tell you he lost $80 million. It's like, yeah, I did.
That's what I first started out with. Yeah,
exactly. And it's, I don't know, man. It's when you disengage from identifying with the hurts that you've been through and you look at them as like objective and neutral, like, yeah, this is my story and this is my life and this is what's happened, rather than like, it's a reflection of me and who I am.
Right. You know? Yeah. It's something you did, but it's not who you are. Right.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. I didn't know we were going to get into trauma work on the Success Podcast.
Well, hey, you know, that's the work that you need to do, I think, to be successful. And one of the things that I notice is that when leaders, when anybody starts focusing on being authentic and looking for what's fulfilling in what they're doing, I believe out of everything that I've seen, they get much more successful. Like actually successful, they get the fulfillment and their bottom line starts to improve. And I think that there's just a lot of energy that gets wasted in, you know, hiding stuff or trying to be strong or all that stuff that doesn't work. And when you can just be vulnerable, be transparent, be honest, look for fulfillment, play the long game, stuff just gets a lot easier.
Yeah, man. And I mean, think about it. It's like if you built a brand off of being authentic and everybody at your company knows who you are as a real person, eventually when you get a paycheck, you're getting paid to be yourself. And what an amazing level of success to know that you don't have to go into work to perform as somebody to get paid. Like you are literally being paid to be yourself. And when you're authentic, now your connections with your coworkers or your employees, whatever, is authentic. So like what better definition of success than I'm paid to be myself and all my connections are enriching and fulfilling.
Yeah, that's fabulous. And I'm sorry, man, I thought I had all these things on silent, but anyway, okay. If you listen through the podcast, you're awake now. So what is there one of those stories that you could share with us? Like one of the you know, messes that you learn something from?
Yes. There's a, I don't know if this is a story that you're looking for, but it's the first one that comes to mind.
That's the one I'm looking for.
That's the one you want. So like I said, I used to direct films and the highlight of that career came when I was directing videos for Jubilee. Right. And Jubilee is, a platform that reaches millions of people, hundreds of millions of people. It is a platform that creates content that bridges people together. It was the epitome of what I wanted at one point as a filmmaker, right? Yeah. So one could say it was effectively a dream job, right?
Yeah.
And it was a dream job for a little while, and then it became a nightmare because I got caught up in this game of, oh, I had 5 million people watching my last video. I need 10 million people to watch the next one. It's like the rat race, right? And then I got caught up in like working too hard. I got caught up in my identity being a filmmaker. I got caught up in my identity of reaching all these people. I just got so caught up that all it created was anxiety and stress and depression for me.
Yeah.
Right. And eventually that started to take a toll on my work, right? Because I come into work and I'm not inspired anymore.
Yeah. You know?
And I don't want to be there. Like I do. I remember like, at one point, I feel like I tell this story all the time, but I remember at one point I'm sitting at my desk. It's after a long day. The CEO leaves, my coworkers leave, everybody walks out and I'm staying because I'm, you know, working late. And the moment the CEO closed the door behind him, I just burst out crying. Oh. Just because I was so unhappy.
Yeah.
So unsatisfied. And right now, like that wouldn't be, you know, I'm more in touch with my emotions now as somebody who's like done the inner work. So like, that's not a big surprise. But then as somebody who was so disconnected from his emotions to cry, that was like, you know, that next level brokenness, you know? And the story that's so interesting, the main thing that I get away from this is I knew how out of touch with myself and out of happiness I was for months. And I knew that going into work every day, I was not happy, right? And I remember at one point I had a conversation with my assistant and my assistant said, and I was telling her, she knew how unhappy I was. She saw how un-myself I was. And I told her, I was like, you know what? Yes, I'm unhappy. Yes, this is not working out, but let me give it another 6 months. And I sat with her and I was like, look, I'll even put in my calendar. I was like, if I still feel this way by my birthday, I will leave this job. Right. And what's so beautiful is that I made that decision. I was clear. I put it in my calendar. And what's so cool is the next day I walked into work, I got fired.
Yep.
And what a beautiful blessing. You know what I mean? Like I don't identify with any spiritual beliefs, but if we want to look at it through that lens, I interpret it as the universe being like, you were going to do what to yourself? It's like, you know, that stubbing your toe on this thing every single day is not supporting you, but to show how strong you are and to show how resilient you are, you're going to keep stubbing your toe. The universe is like, let me cut off your damn toe because you don't know what to do with yourself. You know,
you stub your toe for another 6 months. Let's just end it now.
Right. And the biggest, I mean, because at that moment, I'm looking at, when I say, yes, I'll stay another 6 months, John, all I'm doing is looking in the mirror and saying, hey, I see how happy you are. I'm going to put you through it for another 6 months.
Yup. Yup.
And all that is a massive reflection of a lack of self-love.
Mm.
That's all that is.
Yeah.
You're literally like, I don't know if I can cuss on your podcast, so feel free to bleep it out. But it's like looking in the mirror and saying like, hey, man, fuck you.
Mm-hmm.
I don't care about you.
Right? Yeah.
Exactly. You know, and thank God I got fired, man.
Yeah. Like, well, you know, thank God. I think the other thing, just to be fair to your maybe less enlightened self, is just fear, right? That was a fear-based decision to, I'm going to give you 6 months, right? Because I'm terrified. I don't know what to do.
Where am I going to get money? Like, right? I'm so young and I already have all success and I'm about to just give it up. Like, yeah, of course. Of course it's scarcity mindset. Of course it's fear-based mindset. Yeah. But I mean, I just hope that anybody who's listening to this, man, just realize there is not one lane for you to play in. Like, don't get attached to the box that you created for yourself, even if that box pays your bills, even if that box makes everybody think that you're super successful. It's like, if you are successful, you'll know it. You'll feel it. If you don't feel successful, you're not successful.
Yeah. Yeah, that's good. That's good. So, so how did it feel in that moment when you got fired? Like, go back there.
Like a massive exhale. Okay.
What was that first rush of emotion?
Honestly, man, it's the first rush of emotions. I remember the words. The words were, we're going to have to let you go. And it was amazing because it's like I had this massive, just huge weight on my back. Like I just picture this like image I remember seeing as a kid of like that one guy who he was like under punishment by Hercules and he had that big rock that he had to take up the mountain every day or something. And it felt like somebody else took the rock off for me. You know?
It was really, at that point, it was a real weight off your shoulders, so to speak.
And dude, the only thing when I look back, the only thing I regret about it is I could have taken that rock off by myself.
Right.
I was holding on to the rock. I could have dropped it at any time. And I had to wait for somebody to be like, hey, you are fired. I'm taking this rock off, you know? Yeah, man. I mean, that the biggest feeling you would think like the whole thing. I love what you said, this idea of like, you don't do it because you're afraid of like, how you're going to get money or how you're going to, you know, maintain your status or whatever. And when you actually separate yourself from that box, you don't feel any of that, at least for the moment. I didn't feel any like fear of like, oh my God, where am I going to get money from? Or, oh my God, like, am I going to still be a filmmaker? All I felt was, oh, thank you. I don't have to do this to myself anymore.
Thorn in my paw. Thank you for pulling it out.
Yeah, man.
Yeah, well, that's really, that's interesting. And, you know, it's, for any of the entrepreneurs out there that are listening, there's that saying that people use a lot where they say, burn the boats, right? Because when you come to the new world and you're about to go try to conquer, instead of leaving the boats there so you have an escape route, you just burn all the boats and then you got to win so that you can build more boats to get home, right? So
you're so capable, like people don't realize how much they're capable of when they no longer have excuses. When you don't have an excuse anymore, you will show up as one of the highest versions of yourself.
And, you know, I cannot say that when I, you know, when I started what I'm doing now, executive speaking success, it was definitely one of those moments. However, I will be very honest about saying that I did not light the boats myself. You know, I did not set fire to the boats. I did not have that courage in me. I could not bring myself to do that. But finally, like you, the universe, circumstance just finally said poof and the boats were on fire. I was like, you know, and at least I didn't waste a lot of effort trying to put out the fire. I just, I realized, okay, they're freaking burning up. What am I going to do now?
And what am I going to do about it? Exactly.
I did this, you know, and, and so there's a lot of, you know, there's a lot of maybe false bravado to that whole burn the boats. Cause I know a lot of entrepreneurs who like, if they're going to be really honest about it, the boats caught on freaking fire by themselves. And then there they were on the beach with the boats burned and they're like, okay.
Time to do something.
What
made you afraid when you were about to jump into ESS?
Well, you know, I was always 50 grand in debt and had millions of dollars of useless stock and was working as an entrepreneur. I was always an early stage employee or a founder or a co-founder. And so I was terrified because when, you know, I mean, I was already massively in debt because I had been working for way too little money and, you know, praying my options would become liquid at some point. And then that dried up. It was about 2010, 2011, something like that. I think I was on the tail end of the 2008 thing. You know, I rode the whip out to the very tip and it cracked. And so I had just a ton of debt already. And that scared me. You know, I wanted to be out of debt before I tried something new and blah, blah, blah. And then all of that dried up and I didn't have any idea what I was going to do, Amari. I thought I have nothing valuable because I've always been an entrepreneur. I've always done everything. I don't have any particular trade or skill. I can do a little bit of everything. And then I started thinking, oh, you know, I've been a public speaker and I've done leadership and stuff. I'll do that. And everybody I talked to said, oh, you don't want to do that. You'll never make any money at that. That's terrible. Don't do that. And so I cried for another month. And then finally, the big breakthrough for me was I realized, I thought about it and I saw the difference I made when I worked with people on their communication and on their leadership and stuff, because I'd been doing that just on the side for fun and beer money. But I knew I made a difference there and I knew I provided value. So I just finally said, look, you know what? Who cares if I make money? I'm going to just do this anyway. And it's important to make money because you've got to sustain sustainability. But
of course, yeah.
When I shifted my focus to where is my highest value that I can provide versus how can I make money? Will this make money? Will people pay for this? I shifted to, I want to provide value. And for the first year and a half, 2 years, I just went further in debt. But I saw something was happening, right? And I loved doing it. So by year three, I made more than I ever made in my life. And then I doubled that plus, and then I tripled that plus.
Hell yeah. And,
all because I focused on what do I do that provides the highest value. And I just happened to love providing doing that too, you know?
Right. Which probably felt a little bit more like success.
Oh, way more. And listen, just to be really honest about it, I remember many more than one day when I would be sitting in front of my computer and I would be crying so hard that I would have to blow my nose multiple times. I was so scared and so frustrated and had no idea how it was going to work out. And I'd just gotten married and I love Sharon and I wanted to, you know, provide a great life for her. And I had no idea how I was even going to, you know, pay rent by the end of the month sometimes. And so it wasn't easy, you know, but I just kept doing it. And that does end up feeling a lot more like success because I love what I do. It's super fulfilling. You know, I know it provides value. And it was really interesting to finally find something that other people valued that much that I did. I was like, wow, that's cool. You know, it feels so good to do something that makes a difference for people.
Yeah. You know, sorry, I don't want to cut you off.
No, I want to hear from you.
You know what that makes me think of is like when I was filmmaking, when I got to that height of where I got to.
Yep.
That took a lot of work. That took a lot of stress. That took a lot of anxiety. I moved across the country for that. I did, you know, I made it happen. Right?
Mm-hmm.
So creating a life for myself where I felt unsuccessful also took a lot of work. So why not also just put in a shit ton of effort to feel dope, to feel the success, to have, like, either way, it's going to take work.
Right. That's a really great point. That is so funny. I love it.
So why, like, it's just that one roadmap might look a little prettier to other people.
Right.
So that's and it might be the one that maybe is carved out for us. So that's the one people are like, oh yeah, I should go with that one. But that one also takes a lot of work.
Yeah. Well, and you just said the word, you know, that I think one of the words that really ruins people's lives is should.
Exactly, man.
I should.
Terrible. Yes.
Like, I should do, you know? Yeah. Well, okay, great. Maybe it does look like the one you should do, but when did should ever make a difference? I mean, the world should be fair. Is it?
Yeah. Yeah. Like, when was the, I don't think I've ever met anybody who I can feel the success radiating off of. And I mean like happiness and fulfillment and all that. Like, I've never met anybody who feels like that, who lived a life that they felt like they should have lived.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. It's really true. It's really true. I mean, and it can be really scary, I think, to let go of what you should do and what you think other people think you should do and all that. Like, that's a really terrifying, almost unmooring moment for people. And I think that it's the first step towards really getting in touch with what you actually would love to do and would succeed even more at.
You know, what's interesting is like this idea of should is like, it's like you get born and then you're given a set of directions. This is what you should do, right?
Yeah.
And when you follow that, it's almost like, well, if I fail, then I can blame whoever gave me these directions.
Yeah, for sure.
But then if you fail doing something that you're not subscribed to do or that you didn't get directions for, then you really have nobody else to look at but yourself.
Right.
But yeah, that's the irony, is that either way you have nobody to look at but yourself.
Right. Yeah. Ultimately, you're responsible for it anyway.
Right. It's like, I remember watching like a Jim Carrey video, I don't know, maybe years ago, but he was like, some moment happened in his life, and he's like, I realized I could fail doing something I didn't want to do also. So why not fail doing something that I do want to do?
Right. And when you really do want to do it, the chances you're going to fail go down dramatically.
Yeah, man. And that's the thing that people really got to understand, is that when you're really in, like, people in my culture call it in your bag, right? Like, when you're really in your zone, you're actually next level capable,
yeah,
next level potential, next level ability, next level power, is because it's just naturally you.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, to bring that home to leadership, it's just so much more powerful to lead from that place of being authentic.
Authentic, yes.
And, you know, one of the things that I heard in the background of a lot of the things that you're saying that I think about, and I think you do, I think we touched on this right at the very beginning. I read a while ago, and I think there's a few different sources for this, but I read about it, Gandhi said it, but I think Gandhi might have gotten it from a famous Native American leader. But the whole idea of your personality is like a bundle of sticks. And if they're just haphazardly mixed together on top of each other, going all different directions, you can just easily break all of those sticks. But the minute that you comb them and consciously get them all aligned and all in the same direction, and I mean by analogy, your personality is, you know, you are the same person wherever you are, and you're not being something here and being something else you should
be there. Right, right.
To get all those things in alignment, now if you grab that bundle of sticks, you can flex it, but you can't break it at all, right?
Yes.
And so that was something that was, you know, that was something that I very consciously started taking on quite a while ago, like probably around 2000, or I mean, I was inspired by that before, but I actually took real action on that starting in about 2002. Mm-hmm. And it is something that has really, I think, paid off in a huge way, because I'm just me and I don't
imagine that.
Right? And how simple is that, right? There's nothing I have to remember. There's nothing that I'm really trying hard to be in a certain situation that I'm not in another, you know, and that whole idea of getting your entire personality orchestrated and in harmony across all the different zones of your life, mm-hmm, and realms of your life, I think that's really powerful. And I think I heard something of that in what you were saying earlier. Does that resonate with you? Is that
100%, man? 100%. Like, whatever the recipe for success is, authenticity is a massive ingredient. Like, yeah. I do not believe that success can be felt or expressed without authenticity.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, in authenticity, it's a word that gets thrown around a lot. Doesn't take any value away from it. The big thing, though, I think about authenticity is it's kind of an is or isn't kind of deal. Hmm. You can't be sort of authentic, you know? Authentic has to be real, and it has to be through all the different levels and realms, or else there's an inauthenticity to it.
Right, right. And a lot of times, to bring it back to this core nugget of leadership that we talk about, a lot of times leaders are told, like, they have to, like you said, be a certain way, whether it's politically correct or they have to be, you know, strong and rigid. It's like, that's not, if it, yes, if that is you, but nobody was born being politically correct, right? Like, for me, I remember I used to work for somebody, and the mission of what we were working on together, we were so aligned.
Yeah.
But from day one, I always felt like a disconnect from them. right? And mm-hmm. after I left the company, years later, we had a conversation and they talked about this idea of, yeah, like the person that was like in your role beforehand, like I had like a, it was their brother, right, at the time. Mm-hmm. And they were like, oh yeah, we didn't have that good of a relationship. And I felt kind of hurt when he left the company. So it prevents me from opening up. And uh-huh. I told him, and I was like, he was the CEO of the company. I'm like, dude, all I ever wanted at the company was for you to be transparent. All I yeah. ever wanted as to you as a leader was for like that layer of just like, hey, I am a real human being as well. Right. And yet he thought that he had to play this role that yeah. of, you know, disconnect. And it's like, no, nobody wants to follow a robot. People get yeah. enamored. Like somebody has a quote, I'm going to mess it up, but Jason Silva talks about this a lot. And it's like the allure of the unconflicted man.
Oh, that's really good. That's really, really good.
That's what everybody gets drawn to.
Yeah.
The people who are just so clear.
Yeah.
The people who are just not ashamed to be themselves. Those are the people that we want to follow because those are the people that motivate us and inspire us to activate our own talents and our own abilities and our own perspectives. Like, yeah. how would I feel comfortable as an employee being myself and offering maybe my unique thing that could take this company to the next level if I don't feel like that's a value that's instilled in our leadership?
Yeah. Yeah. If they're not living that and demonstrating that, you're not going to feel safe bringing that.
Of course not. And your job as a leader is to bring out the utmost potential in every person around you. And yeah. you know that the potential resides in their authenticity. You know that you hired that person because they have a unique gift and a unique perspective. But if they don't feel comfortable on bringing out that unique gift and that unique perspective, then you're just throwing away money.
Yeah. Amari, this is one of the things that I talk about a lot in my training, and it's a fundamental neurobiological aspect of being human, and it's yeah. called mirror neurons.
Oh my God.
Right? John, we all have mirror neurons. We mirror what we see other people going through. We mirror what we see other people doing. And so, you know, that person that goes around thinking everybody's grumpy, you know, we're not grumpy. When they walk in the room, we get grumpy because they're grumpy. yeah. The minute they leave, nobody's grumpy anymore.
Everybody's fine now. Yeah.
So, but they go around thinking everybody's grumpy. And right. that's one of the, I think that's one of the hardest pieces of leadership is utterly, fundamentally, deeply walking your talk, being the kind of person that you want your team to be, giving them something good to mirror. So that brings up something that I talk about a lot in the work that I do, Amari, which is mirror neurons. They're neurons that we have in our bodies that have us yes. mirror what we see other people doing, feeling, how they're mm-hmm. being, you know, and mm-hmm. when that grumpy person walks in the room, and they think everybody else is grumpy. Well, yeah, we're all grumpy because they just walked in and they're grumpy. But the yeah. we're not grumpy anymore, but right. they are. And everywhere they go, they think everyone's grumpy. And that's what I think is one of the most fundamentally difficult parts of leadership mm. is being like walking your talk, right?
Right, right.
Being
right.
the person that you want your team to be, being the way that you want your team to be and being fully that all the way through. Mm. That's really, really powerful. And it takes something.
Yeah. John, this is why I love you. You know, I love talking about the neurobiology of this stuff. This is where we take stuff that sounds maybe like one liner or cliche. And this is where we really ground it in the practical, you know, so that when your listeners are hearing it, they're like, oh, this is not just like, you know, cool quotes out of a book. This is actually how the mind works. And yeah. when you understand how the mind works, then you can start to optimize your own mind's performance. So I love, I love talking about this. I could talk about it for days. And also to contend your point, I would actually throw in something into the mix.
Yes.
I would say, and this is something I've wrestled with and has been, you know, it was difficult to me on my leadership path was this idea of, I have to show up as happy Amari all the time.
Right.
And if we're actually talking about this idea of authenticity, for me to maybe show up all chipper and ready to go one day when that's really just not how I'm feeling, then we start to play a very interesting game, right?
Yeah,
and that's why I think it's like, yes, we talk about this idea of authenticity for leaders, but also this idea of self-awareness, right?
Yes.
So for a leader to do the inner work, to get the coaching, to do the mentor development, to understand like, oh, these emotions that I'm experiencing or whatever I have going on, I'm able to process it. And rather than just being like, you know, the disgruntled employee who's like, you know, having a shitty day at home or whatever, and he comes in and just spreads that everywhere, you know, the leader has like, not a responsibility, but the opportunity to have more self-awareness to say like, okay, cool. Maybe things aren't good for me at home right now, but I don't want to go into the office and just like spread negative energy. So maybe I go into the office and I'm like super honest with people. I'm like, hey, everybody, I'm not feeling it today, but I want you all to know that I'm here for you if you need me, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Right. So he can be in integrity with his authenticity, and he doesn't have to play a role of being, you know, Mr. Cheery Pants all the time.
Right. Well, it's that insightful authenticity, right? Like I'm having a bad time. It's a rough day for me. And I just want you to know that's not on you. That's on me.
Right.
And I'm working on it. Right?
Right.
And I'm here because you are the greatest people on earth and our mission is important. So I'm not going to let this take me out. I just didn't want to get it on you. So
which is powerful leadership.
Yeah.
Powerful leadership when you own that. Right. Because what happens if he doesn't, he just walks in and he's like super upset. Now all the employees are like, oh, is he mad at me? Did I do something wrong? Yep. Right. Because they're looking to you for the validation. They're looking to you for the confirmation. And if they don't know what you've got going on because you're not, you know, self-aware enough to admit it, then they're just going to project that onto themselves. Like, oh man, either one, he's an ass, or two, I've done something wrong and he's upset at me.
And either way, we're not being as good and getting as much accomplished today as we could have.
Exactly. Right. Right? Exactly. Yeah.
So Amari, I noticed that our time's up. I know that we have a hard stop. And so I just want to say thank you very, very much. It's such a blast to talk to you.
And it is a blast to be on this, man. I appreciate you.
Right on. Well, we'll have to do this again sometime pretty soon.
And yeah, we were just getting started, man. You started talking about mirror neurons. I was like, oh man, I was just getting warmed up.
And you know, we are going to be doing some things together down the line here sooner or later.
Yes,
so
yes, very near future.
Can watch for that. And if you want to find Amari on Instagram, he's at king.amari, but king is K-Y-N-G. .imari. Yep. His website is howtohuman.io.
Yep.
And Mari, thank you very, very much for sharing yourself so generously with us. It's a blast to talk with you.
It's such a blast. You are just a reflection, man. I appreciate sharing just the passion and the insight and just our own journeys together, man. I from the day one, we've always seen so much of ourselves and each other. So I'm glad to continue this journey with you, man.
I'm glad to be on the journey with you, man. And it's a lifelong thing.
Yeah, hell yeah. Well, thank you for having me on, man. I appreciate it.
You're super welcome.
Thank you for joining the Speak Like a Leader podcast. Go be awesome.